Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everybody. Today's Friday. It's the 1st of December, and it's 10 o'clock on the Eastern Seaboard. As you well know, even though there was a major scare with me a few days ago, it turns out that I'm connected to the internet physically. Even I've got many units of medical equipment in my body, and that keeps track of everything that's going on internally, heartbeat and pulse and just everything else. So that's measured 24/7. And no holidays, nothing like that. And so it turns out that there was a failure in one of the units that was in my body. And so it was recognized by the telemetry that I'm connected to through the internet. And the hospital sent an ambulance for me. And even though when I arrived there, they said, well, how are you feeling? And I said, I'm feeling fine, because I was feeling fine. So they ended up recognizing that there was a failure in one of the units that was embedded in my body. And so that had to be replaced, which it was. And then so everything turned out to be all right at the end. So it was just a scare. And more with the hospital staff than with me, because I was feeling okay. And so they eventually sent me home. So everything is cool. And so I have an opportunity to get back to you and talk to you about some of the latest stuff that's going on. And one of the most interesting, actually, is that Russia is going to be sending fighter jets and attack helicopters. Are you sitting down for this? To Iran. That's what state media said from Moscow. Well, the move could strengthen ties that already have the United States worried. This was noted by Jake Epstein, who writes for Business Insider. So first off, some of the highlights. Russia is slated to send Iran advanced fighter jet and attack helicopters, the report says. And Iranian state media says that the agreement will strengthen the country's air force. And thirdly, the deal comes amid U.S. warnings that Moscow and Tehran are increasing their defense cooperation. Well, Russia has agreed to send advanced fighter jets and attack helicopters to Iran in a deal that would provide a significant boost to the country's air force, Iranian media reported. Well, the reported agreement comes as the United States expresses greater concern over what it describes as increasing defense cooperation between Moscow and Tehran. A top White House official said last week that the, quote, expanding military partnership, end quote, is, quote, not good, end quote, for Ukraine or the Middle East region. Plans have been finalized for Russia to deliver an unspecified number of Su-35 fighter jets, MIL, Mi-28 attack helicopters, and Yakovlev Yak-130 jet trainers, the semi-official Tasnim news agency reported on Tuesday. Bear with me a second. Where are we here? Just lost my place because of a warning from one of my systems here, so bear with me a moment. Okay, so the report was, okay, so the plans were finalized for Russia to deliver the unspecified number of Su-35 fighter jets, MIL or Mi-28 attack helicopters, and Yakovlev Yak-130 jet trainers, the semi-official Tasnim news agency reported on Tuesday and citing Iran Deputy Defense Minister. So the report was then later confirmed on Wednesday by the official state-run Islamic Republic news agency, IRNA. So the Kremlin has yet to publicly confirm the deal, which Tasnim said would be the first time that Tehran has purchased fighter aircraft since the 1990s. Well, Iran announced earlier this year that it had already finalized the deal to purchase the Su-35, a multi-role fighter that's been active in Ukraine, but Tehran was still looking to acquire additional military equipment like attack helicopters and combat training aircraft from Moscow. Well, the White House National Security Council spokesperson John Kirby told reporters that this is part of the, quote, increasing military cooperation, end quote, that's formulated between Russia and Iran as Moscow has become more isolated on the world stage over its unprovoked war in Ukraine. Well, this expanded defense partnership, he said, is harmful, quote, unquote, to Kyiv, Tehran's neighbors, and the international community. Kirby said that Iran has already provided Russia with artillery, ammunition, guided aerial bombs, and drones, the most notorious of them being the Shahed loitering munitions, which have been used to terrorize Ukrainian cities and civilian infrastructure. The United States is growing concerned that Tehran may go a step further than the support it has already provided and outfit the Russian war machine with ballistic missiles, turn for that support. Russia has been offering Tehran unprecedented defense cooperation, including on missiles, electronics, and air defense, end quote, Kirby said, adding that Iran is ultimately seeking billions of dollars worth of military equipment to strengthen its own capabilities. Quote, in response to Iran's support for Russia's war in Ukraine, we've already taken a range of steps, including implementing numerous U.S. sanctions, designations, and working with partners like the European Union to expand the scope of their sanctions authority and their designation, Kirby said. Well, IRNA noted that the Su-35s included in the reported agreement will provide a boost to Iran's military and, quote, dispel rising suspicions, end quote, that Russia was taking advantage of Iran in their military cooperation. Well, the agency also said that agreement is important to Moscow because it will, quote, prove, end quote, it can still secure foreign military sales. Well, prior to the invasion of Ukraine, Moscow was the world's second largest arms exporter behind the United States, according to a 2021 Congressional Research Service report. And at that time, the Kremlin sold weapons to over 45 countries and since 2016 had accounted for 20% of global sales, with aircraft making up half of that number. But Russia's war in Ukraine has disrupted its foreign military sales, an important component of the country's defense apparatus. Well, the Institute for the Study of War, a Washington-based think tank, said that the transfer of Russian aircraft, Iranian leaders have repeatedly indicated since late 2022 that they would soon receive advanced aircraft from Russia without receiving anything else, end quote. Analyst wrote in a Tuesday assessment. Well, ISW experts noted that Russia's military support to Iran comes as the two countries have, quote, tried to coordinate politically vis-a-vis the ongoing Israel-Hamas war. Quote, Iranian and Russian officials have engaged one another repeatedly in recent weeks to discuss the war and cooperate in advocating for a ceasefire, they wrote. Iran supports several militant groups across the Middle East, including Hamas in Gaza, Hezbollah in Lebanon, the Houthis in Yemen, and various proxies in Iraq and Syria. The United States has repeatedly warned Tehran over the past few weeks to avoid allowing the conflict to escalate and spiral into a regional war. Yet American forces in Iraq and Syria have still come under fire dozens of times. So these are very, very big issues. Also, Russia's huge air force is still mostly intact, but it hasn't been building the jets it needs to win on the ground in Ukraine. So I guess that's something that we'll have to learn more about, and eventually in time we'll find out how all that goes. Unbelievable. Okay, so let's look at some other things that are happening around the world. And it seems that the Israel-Hamas war, with regard to the Israel-Hamas war, the IDF says the combat resumes in Gaza. Israel has said its fighter jets are striking targets, quote-unquote, in Gaza, after accusing Hamas of violating a truce agreement. Earlier, the IDF said it had intercepted rocket fire from the territory. So Qatar has said that a truce negotiations are still ongoing amid a resumption of fighting. Israel has said combat has resumed in Gaza after the truce expires. According to Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, Hamas violated terms of the truce, and 8 Israeli hostages were released by Hamas on Thursday. Israel freed 30 Palestinian prisoners overnight. Well, the Israeli government has said that there are still 137 hostages being held in Gaza. This figure includes 115 men, 20 women, and 2 children, according to Israeli government spokesperson Elon Levy. Of the 137 hostages, 126 of them hold Israeli citizenship and 11 are foreigners, Levy had said. Well, the foreigners include 8 Thai nationals, 1 Nepalese, 1 Tanzanian, and 1 French-Mexican dual citizen. German news agency DPA reported that, according to the families, 8 Israeli hostages also have German passports. So during the October 7 terror attacks, Hamas and other militant groups took around 240 people from southern Israel as hostages. They also killed around 1,200 people at the time. About an hour ago, we hear that siren sound in northern Israel amid resumed fighting. The Israel Defense Forces reported that sirens had sounded in northern Israel near the border with Lebanon on Friday afternoon. Israel did not specify what caused the sirens to go off. Hezbollah, an Iran-backed paramilitary group in Lebanon, has frequently launched rockets at Israel during the ongoing Israel-Hamas war. Hezbollah is classified as a terrorist organization, not only by Israel, but also by the United States, Germany, and several other countries. So Hezbollah and Israel fought a war in 2006 after Hezbollah killed several Israeli soldiers in a cross-border raid. And about an hour ago, we heard that the IDF spokesperson says that Hamas could have extended the truce by releasing more hostages. It seems that the IDF spokesperson, Peter Lerner, has defended Israel's resumption of its military offensive in Gaza on Friday after a tenuous 7-day truce. Hamas chose to violate the ceasefire when they chose not to release the women and children, Lerner advised Deutsche Welle. This is a very clear violation. It was absolutely apparent from day one that it was only a matter of time until Hamas decided not to transfer the hostages, end quote. Lerner said that the Islamist militant group could have extended the truce by releasing 20 Israeli women and children it is still holding hostage, and Hamas, meanwhile, has accused Israel of ending the truce. On Friday morning, Israel dropped leaflets on the southern Gaza Strip, telling residents in the city of Khan Yunis to move further south to Rafah, located on the border with Egypt. when asked by Deutsche Welle if this means Israel is expanding its military operation in Gaza, Lerner reiterated, quote, "We will seek out and hunt down Hamas wherever they are in the north or in the south." Quote, "Indeed, we've distributed these leaflets in order to get people out of harm's way," end quote, he added. Quote, "We do not intend on operating. We're not giving a specific timeline, but as we proved in the past, when we say what we are intending to do on operating, we do operate." But Lerner denied that Israel in the past has called the Palestinians to move to certain places in Gaza and then bomb those areas. He accused Hamas of abusing the civilian arena, quote unquote, and hiding behind civilian infrastructure such as mosques and schools, putting people at risk. Hamas, that rules over Gaza, is considered a terrorist group organization by the United States, Germany, the European Union, among others. Well, Germany and France, about 4 hours ago, urged renewed humanitarian truce. Germany and France on Friday both urged a renewal of the humanitarian truce between Israel and Hamas. Quote, "In these minutes, we must do everything we can to ensure that the humanitarian truce continues," German Foreign Minister Annalena Baerbock said in Berlin. Well, Baerbock said this is needed, quote, "both for the remaining hostages who have been hoping for release while in dark tunnels for weeks, and for the suffering people in Gaza who urgently need more humanitarian aid," end quote. Continuing, Baerbock said that the suffering must finally end for everyone while demanding that Hamas, quote, "to lay down its weapons." During the COP28 climate summit in Dubai, French Foreign Minister Catherine Colonna called the end of the truce, quote, "very bad news," end quote. Colonna labeled the revival of the truce essential, quote, end quote. Well, about 5 hours ago, it seems that the United Nations chief, Antonio Guterres, quote, "deeply regrets," quote, unquote, "the resumption of Gaza fighting." So I deeply regret that military operations have started again in Gaza. I still hope that it will be possible to renew the pause that was established. The return to hostilities only shows how important it is to have a true humanitarian ceasefire. Guterres hopes that, quote, "it will be possible to renew the collapsed truce." He added that the return to hostilities only shows how important it is to have a true humanitarian ceasefire. A spokesperson for the United Nations Children's Agency, UNICEF, also urged a lasting ceasefire. Inaction at its core is an approval of the fighting of children, of the killing of children, rather, UNICEF spokesperson James Elder said. He said it was, quote, "reckless to think more attacks on the people of Gaza will lead to anything other than carnage," end quote. Well, Israel launched its military operation against Hamas in Gaza after Hamas carried out terror attacks on Israel on October 7th. Israel has said that it follows international law during its offensive and takes extra precautions to ensure the protection of Gaza civilians. Well, the Kremlin is going to, quote, "continue efforts," end quote, on the release of Russian hostages in Gaza. Dmitry Peskov, the presidential press secretary for Vladimir Putin, said that Russia would, quote, "continue efforts," end quote, to free Russian hostages still held by Hamas in Gaza. The American Jewish Committee, citing Israeli government figures, has said that 6 Russians are held hostage in Gaza. On Wednesday, Hamas released 2 of the hostages with Russian citizenship, with another Russian national also freed on November 26. Peskov told journalists via phone that Russia, quote, "would certainly have preferred to see news of another extension of the humanitarian pause," end quote. Although the United States, Germany, and the European Union and others deem Hamas to be a terrorist organization, Russia does not. In October, a high-ranking Hamas delegation visited Moscow amid the Israel-Hamas war in Gaza. Well, about 6 hours ago, Qatar says that truce negotiations are still ongoing. The Qatari Foreign Ministry said that truce negotiations between the Israeli and Palestinian sides regarding Gaza are still ongoing. Qatar also expressed, quote, deep, Here it is, just somehow it was like a glitch on the internet. So Peskov told reporters via telephone that Russia, quote, would certainly have preferred to see news of another extension of the humanitarian pause. And although that's the situation. Anyway, Qatar says that the truce negotiations are still ongoing. That's where I left off with you last time. Qatar's a key mediator between Israel and Hamas and helped broker the previous truce agreement. The Qatari government is also seen as friendly towards Hamas, with Hamas leaders such as Ismail Haniyeh living in the country. Hamas, a militant Islamist group, that rules over Gaza, is considered a terrorist organization by the U.S., Germany, European Union, and others. Well, about 7 hours ago, Israel dropped leaflets urging Gazans to leave Khan Yunis. I read this to you before. So about 9 hours ago, it says Israel said that it is striking Hamas targets in Gaza. Israel Defense Forces said they are carrying out a wave of strikes against Hamas targets in Gaza after announcing the resumption of combat, quote unquote, in the Palestinian territory. Israel earlier said it intercepted a rocket fired from Gaza and accused Hamas of breaking the truce shortly ahead of its expiry. Well, Hamas is an Islamist group. The Agence France news agency said its journalists reported Israeli warplanes carrying out a series of strikes as well as artillery fire in Gaza City in the north of the Strip. Well, Gaza's Hamas-run Interior Ministry said that airstrikes also hit southern Gaza. And throughout the war, Israel has repeatedly warned Gazan citizens to move southward. And during the truce, it cautioned against returning to the north, which says it is a war zone. About 14 hours ago, Israel released the next group of 30 Palestinian prisoners. Israeli prison authorities said that they released 30 Palestinian prisoners overnight into Thursday in the latest exchange as part of a truce deal with Hamas. Their release followed the successful transfer of more Israeli hostages from Hamas captivity in Gaza on Thursday. So in total, Hamas released 8 hostages on Thursday, but another 2 Israeli-Russian dual-sit nationals released on Wednesday were also taken into consideration when releasing 30 prisoners, according to Qatari mediators. Israel and Hamas had agreed to a 3-to-1 exchange ratio for these swaps. The bulk of the prisoners were sent to Ramallah in the occupied West Bank and were greeted jubilantly on the city's streets. It's the 7th such exchange on consecutive nights under the terms of the truce. So we'll just see how all these things pan out, because I'm really not quite sure how they will. Okay, let's move on to some other issues. It seems that North Gaza residents are fleeing south and setting up camp in schools and hospitals. a United Nations camp with no water for days, makeshift shelters in schools, and hospitals that are already overwhelmed. These are the conditions that residents from the northern part of the Gaza Strip find when they arrive in the south after fleeing the Israeli bombardment. The Florence Van Katz Observer team has been following two families who fled the north to seek refuge in the south. They set up camp at schools and hospitals where supplies are severely lacking. A weekly news show produced with photos, videos, and personal accounts from Florence Van Katz observers around the world, all checked by staff, were in Paris. So we'll just have to see how all this transpires. So bear with me a moment. One moment here. Okay. Seems that there is a wave of coordinated disinformation campaigns which are targeting the Israel-Palestine conflict. A weekly news show produced with photos, videos, and personal accounts from Florence Van Katz observers around the world, all checked by their staff in Paris. So we're just not quite sure where all the disinformation is coming from, but evidently there is. Bear with me a moment here, 1 second here. Sorry about the delay. I'm going through all the notes. All right, let me just check some other things. I also want you to go somewhere a little bit closer to home. Give me a second here. Well, the New York Times reports that a return to Haiti of a coup leader raises concerns of more turmoil. Guy Philippe, who helped lead the coup that ousted President Jean-Bertrand Aristide in 2004, is back in the politically unstable country after serving time in the U.S. prison. Reporting from Mexico City is James Wagner. Guy Philippe, the former Haitian police commander, politician, and rebel, who staged a coup against his country's then president in 2004 and served 6 years in a U.S. federal prison for money laundering, was deported to Haiti on Thursday, according to one of his attorneys in Haiti, Emmanuel Ronqui. Well, the return of Mr. Philippe, 55, has fueled concerns that he will add to the turmoil in the Caribbean country, already in a fragile state because of political instability and a rise in killings as heavily armed gangs try to quell a citizen-led vigilante movement. It's not immediately clear what the authorities' plans were for handling Mr. Philippe's potentially disruptive presence in Haiti. Upon arriving at the airport in Port-au-Prince, where local media reports said some of his supporters were seen rallying, Mr. Philippe was taken by the Haitian authorities to the headquarters of the Judicial Police Department, which is responsible for investigating crimes. Mr. Gentil said he and a colleague briefly saw Mr. Philippe at the station on Thursday. He said he did not know why Mr. Philippe remained there as of Thursday afternoon. Guy Philippe is a Haitian citizen, Mr. Gentil said in a phone interview. Quote, after his punishment, he's back in the country, in his country. I suppose that any person after spending time in prison wants to return home. He's waiting to go home and see his family, end quote. A police spokesperson did not return requests for comment. Mr. Philippe was one of the leaders in the 2004 coup that ousted President Jean-Bertrand Aristide. He then tried unsuccessfully to run for president in 2006, but did win election in the Haitian Senate in 2016, 10 years later. Something of a populist hero, particularly in his native Southwest region, Mr. Philippe was dogged by accusations of human rights abuses, including extrajudicial killings, while the top police official. In 2005, Mr. Philippe was secretly indicted by a federal grand jury in the United States that accused him of running drugs from Colombia out of Haiti and laundering money. He evaded capture for years. In an interview with the New York Times back in 2016, he maintained that the Americans could find him if they wanted to, as he was living in plain sight. In January 2017, Mr. Philippe was arrested in Haiti and extradited to the United States. After initially arguing that he had been, quote, kidnapped, end quote, for his political beliefs, quote, unquote, he pleaded guilty months later to a money laundering conspiracy and was sentenced to 9 years in prison. Well, according to federal records, Mr. Philippe was released from prison in Georgia on September 7th. He was then transferred into immigration custody and was deported to Haiti on Thursday. The White House referred requests for comment to immigration and ICE, declined to comment, and the Departments of Homeland Security and State did not respond to requests for comment. But Mr. Philippe's arrest in 2017 incited violent protests among his followers. An expert said they could try to build his support back up and become political force. It's hard to speculate what, if anything, this will mean to Jake Johnston, a Haiti expert at the Center for Economic and Policy Research in Washington, speaking of Mr. Philippe's return. Obviously, given his history and his past connections and political ambitions, you can expect it to have some influence on the political situation in the country. But to what extent he has a broad following or direct ambitions right now, we don't know. Okay. We don't even know if he's going to be in jail tomorrow or not. In a letter to the court last November arguing for a reduced sentence, Mr. Philippe wrote that he had, quote, learned from his recklessness and gained an appreciation for risks and consequences, end quote, and was looking forward to return to Haiti, quote, to participate in the betterment, end quote, of his community of Pestel on the Tiburon Peninsula. 2021 assassination of President Jovenel Moïse of Haiti created a power vacuum in the already volatile nation, and gangs took advantage. A vigilante movement, largely comprising of ordinary Haitians in Port-au-Prince and often carrying machetes instead of guns, coalesced earlier this year. Gangs have fought back, causing a resurgence of violence. Haiti's Prime Minister Ariel Henry appealed last year for foreign troops to help restore order. Last month, the United Nations Security Council authorized a Kenyan plan to address the gang violence in what will be the first time an African country has led such a mission in Haiti. According to the United Nations, more than 3,000 homicides have been reported this year in Haiti, along with 1,500 instances of kidnappings for ransom, and 200,000 people have been forced to flee their homes because of the unrest. Well, both ordinary Haitians and experts on the country have doubted if the effort, which called for the deployment of 1,000 Kenyan police officers and several hundred officers or soldiers from Caribbean countries, a smaller force than past interventions in Haiti, would be enough. The Biden administration, which supported the Kenyan plan, was reluctant to lead the mission. André Poultry contributed reporting from Port-au-Prince, Haiti, and Zolan Cano Youngs from Mexico City. So, a lot of stuff is happening all over the world. Unbelievable, huh? Truly amazing. One second here. Let's look furthermore on what's going on. The coup leader Guy Philippe repatriated to Haiti as many question his next role in the country in upheaval. So notorious coup leader Guy Philippe returned to Haiti on Thursday after the United States government repatriated him, sparking concerns that his presence would unleash further upheaval in a country already reeling from gang violence and political instability. So we'll have to see where that goes. Very frightening situation, to say the least. Unbelievable. It is amazing. Always so much turmoil wherever you look. All right, we'll find out what else is going on. Bear with me a moment here. Okay. Let me quickly check to see what else is happening in the Middle East. Okay. One moment here. There will be a moment that I'm trying to get this for you. This is really interesting. Bear with me a moment as I try to get this for you. Hold on a moment. Somehow I'm having difficulty on the website. One moment. Okay. I got to where I needed to go. The Oslo experiment has ended, so says Lieberman. Giving Gaza to Abbas is a dangerous fantasy that has cost us too much, Lieberman had said. Avigdor Lieberman. So Israel Eitenu, a leader, the minister from the Knesset, Avigdor Lieberman, commented on the continued hostilities in Gaza and declared that the Oslo Accords could be considered defunct. Quote, the 30-year-long Oslo experiment in which we paid a heavy price in human lives has come to an end, end quote, he wrote. The recent events have proved beyond all doubt that a serial Holocaust denier and someone who refused to denounce the October 7th massacre with even a single word, neither can nor should rule in Judea and Samaria or the Gaza Strip. Quote, we must say the truth. Two states for two people, a Palestinian nation, and giving the Gaza Strip to Abbas are all dangerous fantasies that have cost us too high a price. Quote, anyone who wants a lasting solution and stability must understand that Judea and Samaria will only ever be Jordan takes responsibility for the Palestinian territories there. And Egypt takes responsibility for the Gaza Strip, he added. Quote, of course, we have displayed no desire to do so, but if we insist and we both and are both forceful and persistent in this matter and use all our leverage against Egypt and Jordan, including Washington, it is not impossible. It is certainly much better than the current plan of two states for two people. So we'll just have to see what's going on. Well, there's a huge number of soldiers still missing and missing supplies and calling on the public. It's a stark reminder that while strides have been made, the journey is far from over. Out of Jerusalem, we hear that as the conflict extended to its 52nd day, a heartwarming campaign aptly titled The Soldiers Can Feel Your Hug, quote-unquote, has been making waves. Spearheaded by Ahi Samach, the campaign has become a beacon of hope for soldiers at the front lines, providing essentials like pocket knives, winter coats, flashlights, and headlights. The demands of the battlefield are ever-evolving. Certainly numerous bases have welcomed new recruits, many of whom are without critical gear for the challenges that lie ahead. A stark reminder that while strides have been made, the journey is far from over. The IDF faces budgetary constraints, often cannot provide these essential items. This gap is where generous donors step in, offering a lifeline to those who stand in defense of the Jewish people. So contributions to the fund are crucial, directly impacting the well-being and efficacy of the soldiers. So that seems to be a major crisis. One second. Another issue. Chemla organization has said that the Jewish women are ensnared into marriage with Arabs. Well, Chemla has been at the forefront of rescuing Jewish women from coercive marriages for over 25 years. So in the midst of ongoing conflicts in Israel, a lesser-known threat has emerged, Jewish women and girls being ensnared into marriages with Arab men. The perilous situation they face has prompted an urgent campaign aimed at securing safe houses to rescue and protect these vulnerable individuals. While the IDF handles external threats, but internal dangers persist when Jewish girls venture into secular universities or public spaces where they encounter Arab men who aim to lure them into relationships. And tragically, many fall prey to their tactics, leading to entrapment in abusive situations within Arab villages. One prominent organization, Chemla, operating in Israel under the guidance of Rebbetzin Rachel Baroness, has been at the forefront of rescuing Jewish women from such coercive marriages for over 25 years. Chemla is backed by a very prominent figure in Israel named Bensi Gopstein, a founder of Lehava. And their primary goal is to retrieve these victims, provide a path back to their Jewish roots and community. Upon rescue, these women undergo comprehensive rehabilitation, encompassing emotional support, physical care, and spiritual nurturing. Rebbetzin Baroness ensures they receive essentials such as food, clothing, shelter, counseling, and security. Additionally, a structured program fosters their confidence and spiritual well-being, treating each rescued individual as part of an encompassing supportive family. However, with the escalation of conflict since October 7, the number of distress calls from victims has surged significantly. To accommodate this growing demand, funds were being raised to establish additional safe houses. These havens offer a haven where victims can find both physical safety and the opportunity to commence their recovery journey. While the initiative invites direct involvement from concerned individuals seeking to make a profound impact on the lives of these victims, the urgent campaign underscores the critical need for immediate action to safeguard the lives of Jewish women and girls at risk of falling prey to coercive marriages, emphasizing the importance of solidarity within the community to protect its vulnerable members. So it is just what it is. Well, some more news. The Hamas leader, Yahya Sinwar, threatened that this was a dress rehearsal. It seems that the leader of Hamas is threatening that October 7th was simply a dress rehearsal. So we'll have to see where all this goes and go from there. It's very hard to appreciate what's happening at the moment. so much is changing. Let's look at some other things that are happening. Bear with me a moment here. In France, we hear that President Emmanuel Macron, who addressed the COP28 summit on Friday as world leaders gathered in Dubai for the second day of the United Nations climate talks. Well, attendees are under pressure to step up efforts to limit global warming, even as the Israel-Hamas conflict casts a shadow over the agenda. So Spain is going to contribute 20 million euros to the climate disaster fund. Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez said on Friday his country will increase its contribution to the climate disaster fund by 20 million euros. Sanchez made the announcement during the United Nations climate conference dubbed COP28 held in Dubai. France's Macron urges the G7 to put an end to coal by 2030. French President Emmanuel Macron urged G7 nations at United Nations climate talks on Friday to set an example to other countries and commit to putting an end to coal by 2030. Well, the COP28 advisory board members resigned over reports of United Arab Emirates fossil fuel deal making. A member of the main advisory board of the COP28 climate summit has resigned over reports that the United Arab Emirates presidency used the meeting to secure new oil gas deals, according to her resignation letter seen by Reuters. Hilda Heine, former president of the low-lying, climate-vulnerable Marshall Islands, said the reports that the United Arab Emirates plan to discuss possible natural gas and other commercial deals ahead of the United Nations climate talks were, quote, deeply disappointing, unquote, and threatened to undermine the credibility of the multilateral negotiation process. Quote, these actions undermine the integrity of the COP presidency and the process as a whole, Heiner wrote in a letter she sent to COP President Sultan Al-Jaber. She added that the only way for Jaber to restore trust in the process was, quote, to deliver an outcome that demonstrates that you are committed to phasing out fossil fuels, end quote. Well, with 80,000 attendees, COP28 is the largest United Nations climate summit ever. COP28 is officially the largest ever United Nations summit, with 80,000 participants registered on the list that for the first time shows who they work for. Until this year, those taking part were not obliged to say who they worked for, making it tricky to detect lobbyists and identifying negotiators' potential conflicts of interest. Some 104,000 people, including technical and security staff, have access to the blue zone, quote unquote, dedicated to the actual climate negotiations and the pavilions of the states and organizations present. That largely exceeds the previous record at last year's United Nations Climate Summit in Egypt, COP27, which had 49,000 accredited attendees and where oil and gas lobbyists outnumbers most national delegations, according to non-governmental organizations. This year, there are nearly 23,500 people from official government teams. Among the host countries' guests are Bill Gates and Antoine Amoux, the son of the Louis Vuitton Moet Hennessy boss Bernard Arnault, the second richest man in the world after Elon Musk, according to Forbes magazine. Well, Iran delegates quit the COP28 over the Israeli presence. It seems that Iranian delegates walked out of the United Nations climate talks in the United Arab Emirates on Friday in protest over the presence of Israeli representatives, state media reported. The Iranian side considered Israel's presence at COP28, quote, as contrary to the goals and guidelines of the conference, and in protest, it left the conference venue, and quote, energy minister Ali Akbar Mehrabian, who headed the Iranian delegation, was quoted as saying by the official news agency IRNA. Well, the United Arab Emirates president announces a $30 billion fund to bridge the climate finance gap. United Arab Emirates President Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed announced the establishment of a $30 billion climate fund for global climate solutions that it hopes will lead to $250 billion in investment by the end of the decade. Dubbed Altera, A-L-T-E-R-R-A, the fund will allocate $25 billion towards climate strategies and $5 billion specifically to incentivize investment flows into the global south, according to a statement by the COP28 presidency in collaboration with global asset managers BlackRock, Brookfield, and TPG. Altera has committed $6.5 billion to climate-dedicated funds for global investments, including the Global South, the statement had said. Altera was established by Abu Dhabi-based alternate investment manager Lunati and COP28 Director General Majid al-Suwaidi, will serve as Altera's chief executive officer. Well, Britain's King Charles III is praying that COP28 is, quote, a turning point for climate. King Charles III has told COP28 climate talks in Dubai must be a, quote, critical turning point, end quote, in the fight against climate change with, quote, genuine transformational action, end quote. He says, I pray with all my heart that COP28 will be another critical turning point towards genuine transformational action, King Charles told assembled leaders, including Indian Minister Narendra Modi, French President Emmanuel Macron, and Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva. Well, the earth does not belong to us. We belong to the earth, said the king, a lifelong environmentalist who missed last year's COP27 in Egypt, reportedly due to objections by then United Kingdom Prime Minister Liz Truss. Well, the United Nations chief says that ending fossil fuel use is the only way to save the burning planet, quote unquote. United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres told world leaders that the burning of fossil fuels must be stopped outright, and a reduction or abatement of their use would not be enough to stop global warming. Quote, we cannot save a burning planet with a fire hose of fossil fuels, Guterres said in a speech to the COP28 summit in Dubai. The 1.5-degree limit is only burning all fossil fuels, not reduce, not abate, he said. He urged fossil fuel companies to invest in the transition to renewable energy sources and told governments to help by forcing that change, including through the use of windfall taxes on industry profits. Seems that the COP28 draft is calling for fossil fuels to be reduced or eliminated. Negotiators released the first draft of the United Nations Agreement on Climate Action on Friday, today, calling for fossil fuels to be reduced or eliminated, setting up a fierce fight at the COP28 talks in the oil-rich United Arab Emirates. Decisions over the future of fossil fuels have already surfaced at the COP28 talks, and proposals for their phase down or phase out, end quote, contained in the draft prepared by the United Kingdom and Singapore will be highly contentious. Calls for the inclusion of explicit curbs on coal, oil, and gas in a final agreement have gained momentum, but any effort to limit fossil fuel use will encounter strong opposition. Well, let's look at Sheikh Mohammed. Qatar's hostage negotiator is no stranger to crisis. After weeks of torturous negotiations, the prime minister has mediated a deal to release some of Israel's captured civilians. So just hours after Hamas's devastating dawn assault on southern Israel, Qatari Prime Minister Sheikh Mohammed bin Abdul Rahman Al Thani was prepared for action. He established a task force and a working group to coordinate with Washington, his government being one of the few, with direct talks to the United States, Israel, Hamas, and the Islamist group's backer, Iran. So within 48 hours, Sheikh Mohammed, who's also a foreign minister, had spoken to the Mossad chief, David Barnea, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, his Iranian counterpart, and Hamas's political leader, Ismail Haniyeh. So these are the latest fascinating stuff. Well, the U.S. has thwarted a plot to kill Sikh separatists on American soil. Joe Biden raised concern of New Delhi's involvement with India's Narendra Modi in September. Well, U.S. authorities thwarted a conspiracy to assassinate a Sikh separatist on American soil and issued a warning to India's government over concerns it was involved in the plot, according to multiple people familiar with the case. Well, the target of the plot was Gul Patwant Singh Panun, an American and Canadian citizen who is general counsel for Sikhs for Justice, a U.S.-based group that is part of a movement pushing for an independent Sikh state called Khalistan. U.S. President Joe Biden raised the matter in a discussion with India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi during a meeting at the G20 summit in New Delhi in September, the Financial Times learned. Well, the National Security Council confirmed the Financial Times report of the plot on Wednesday and said that the United States had raised the issue with India, including, quote, at the senior most levels, end quote. People familiar with the case who requested anonymity because of the sensitive nature of the intelligence that prompted the warning did not say whether the protest to New Delhi led the plotters to abandon their plan or whether the FBI intervened and foiled the scheme already in motion. Well, the United Nations, or the U.S. rather, informed some allies about the plot following the murder of Haldeep Singh Nijjar, a Canadian Sikh separatist killed in Vancouver back in June. In September, Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau said there were, quote, credible allegations, end quote, linking New Delhi to Nijjar's fatal shooting. Well, one person familiar with the situation said that the initial United States protest over the Panun plot was issued after Modi made a high-profile state visit to Washington back in June. Well, separatists from the diplomatic warning, U.S. federal prosecutors have filed a sealed indictment against at least one alleged perpetrator of the plot in the New York District Court, according to people familiar with the case. So much happening around the world. It is truly amazing. It's hard even to keep up with it. One second. One second here. One moment. Okay. We need to get into some other points of view. Bear with me a moment here. Okay. think you'll find this really quite fascinating. Seems real estate for coral. Seems a Swiss organization is building an artificial reef with art and technology. 3D printed clay sculptures that provide shelter to corals are part of an innovative artistic project aimed at conserving sensitive marine ecosystems as the world leaders gather for the COP28 summit in Dubai. Florence Van Katte took a look at an unusual conservation project run by a Swiss non-governmental organization. So in the depths of Lake Geneva near Switzerland's second largest city, a team of divers began work on an underwater castle, a marine palace fit for corals. Reefs, RRRFS, a Zurich-based organization founded in October 2020. It designs artificial coral reefs in clay using a 3D printer. Is an ecological project that combines art, science, and new technologies. Stacked by on a platform, rather, the clay sculptures look like dungeons waiting to be sent to the bottom of the sea. Ochre in hue with ribbed surfaces. They were soft to the touch and weighing about 7 kilos. It's about 15 pounds. About 15 pounds. They have been carefully designed to collect coral larvae carried by ocean currents. And when encrusted, these tiny animals can develop the hard skeletons that eventually form a natural reef. Although coral reefs make up just a modest portion of the seabed, 25% of underwater life depends on these fragile structures. Their benefits are manifold. Reefs serve as a refuge, a breeding ground, and a source of food for fish, and protect coastlines from erosion. Mountains of coral, jewels of the natural world, are disintegrating due to overfishing, water pollution, and marine heat waves. Half of them have died over the past 40 years. Quote, when stressed, corals expel the symbiotic algae that feed them and starve to death, explained a reef's co-founder Marie Griezmann, a t-shirt emblazoned with a fish. She stretched out a hand to her co-founder, Hanna Kufus, hampered by her wetsuit, to lift her out of the water. Reefs does not claim to stop the coral disintegrating, but it is on a mission to offer shelter to surviving larvae and give coral reefs a second chance to grow and take in other living organisms. I'm an estate agent for special animals, Griezmann said with a smile. Quote, what I like about our project is that it uses a passive restoration method, end quote, explained Kufus, a marine biologist by training. Other coral preservation systems using clones, but if one of the organisms is sick, it affects them all. Our technique lets nature take its course, encouraging the development of the offspring of corals best adapted to global warming. By relying on natural reproduction, we can maintain their resistance. Well, reefs draws on the talents of four different people. The idea for the project was first sparked at Swiss Technology Institute ETH Zurich, where Griezmann, an art student, was thinking about how she could connect her passions for art and diving. She crossed paths with Ulrike Freud, a scientist specializing in the preservation of tropical ecosystems, who was doing her final year project on the effects of currents on artificial structures. We began to talk about their plans and dreams for ocean preservation. They were then joined by Josephine Graf, who helped to develop the organization and find customers. Marine biologist Kufus was the fourth person to join the team or the group. Reefs was founded in late 2020. Reefs' first attempts were encouragingly successful. Their first trial, launched in the Maldives with 100 clay bricks of various shapes, began to prosper. And these larvae settle in, and the moment they do, this system attracts a whole community of spores and fish, said Kufus, and a balanced ecosystem community, which with spores and fish, and said Kufus, and a balanced ecosystem develops where the sea urchins eat the algae and so on. In 3 months, we have almost all of the many fish as a natural museum. So that's the story there. Bear with me a moment. So with crowdfunding, Reefs then launched its first complete prototype made up of 228 bricks in partnership with local scientists in Colombia. The teams on site call it El Castillo, the castle, said Reefs more proudly. The goal of Sunday's operation near Geneva was not to attract corals, which live quite far from the Swiss lake. Rather, it was to test their new products in real-life conditions, new generation bricks that are larger and heavier, with a view to a new installation in the Philippines that just received the green light. Nothing was left to chance in the bricks' design. Their porousness, shape, and color are the result of 3 years of testing. We chose a natural color. Okay. Well, I think that's the end of our day with you today. I think we've concluded our broadcast. Tomorrow is another day, but it's the weekend. So I want to wish you a happy weekend. And we'll speak to you again on Monday. All the best. Thanks for listening. Always a pleasure and an honor to serve you. Goodbye.